Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint. Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Oh man, what a great point. What a great series of points by Miranda Devine. Miranda Devine, if you've heard her before, it's either a British or an Australian accent. She's the one who's written the book on all of Hunter and Joe Biden's corruption, a great columnist for the New York Post. But she was on Sean Hannity's radio show yesterday afternoon, and she was making the point that, look, if they had done what President Trump and President Trump's Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke were working to do back in 2018, they wouldn't have these massive fires down in Southern California. And then Miranda Devine made the exact same point that we've made here on this show before. She said, well, they just want to sit back and blame climate change. And I've used that line here on the show before. I just finally, listen, I missed Hannity's program while it was live on the radio yesterday afternoon. So I just went back and found the clip, listened to it just like 45 seconds ago. And she makes that very point. Yeah, they just want to sit back and blame climate change. I've used this quote before, even though I can't remember who first used this quote. But blaming climate change is the new my dog ate my homework excuse for everybody on the left. Their policies cause the crisis. Their policies exacerbate the crisis. But then they don't want to do anything to fix it. They just want to sit back and blame climate change. Anyway, maybe we'll talk more about that here later in the show. We got a great lineup for you here this morning on this Thursday Montana Talks. Senate President from the Montana State Senate, Matt Regeer, joining us for our first weekly legislative update. Mr. President, great to have you back on the show. Week one, how's it going? What's going to happen next?
Well, good morning, Aaron. Good morning, Montana. That's hilarious. The dog ate my homework. That is so right on climate change. right on.
Isn't it spot? It could be used for everything. I mean, crime in the cities. It's just because of this, homelessness. I mean, they just want to blame everything on climate change or racism or this or that. When it's like, no, it's your failed policies.
Yep, exactly. I've got to give the left credit. They get more and more creative each day on what is to be blamed and what isn't. Their talking points are just baffling to me how they come up with those day in and day out. But
yeah. So, week one, I'd be remiss if at some point I didn't bring up this Senate rules fight. But first, let's start bigger picture. Just, the Montana legislative session is now underway. What's it like back there at the Capitol in Helena?
Sure. I mean, every session is fast-paced. Our Constitution just gives us 90 days, so which is great. We just got to cram it all into 90 days. So we've got a lot of issues. I mean, every session is different, but every session has its top issues. Right up there with us this go-around is property tax. We heard that in the doors. I think that's kind of a universal, even bipartisan. I think we're going to have some bipartisan support of how we give property tax relief from the state level. So excited about some of those topics. Education is another big one. We've got the Espinoza decision from years ago.
All right, tell you what, hold that thought, Mr. President. Quick break and more with Senate President Matt Regeer right after this. Income tax cuts as well.
Talking about the issues that matter to Montana statewide. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
So it looks like there might be some bipartisan support for property tax reduction measures, education, some bipartisan support on some measures there. And then, of course, we've got the governor proposing yet another round of income tax cuts. Hey, it worked before, helped our economy, and state revenues still grew. So why not cut our taxes again? Before we get to the Senate rules debate this week, President Regeer, yeah, any other high points of what's topping the legislative agenda here with week one underway?
Sure, yeah, property tax relief, education, but also judicial reform. We've got our Montana courts that are neck deep into legislative process, and that's not the way we're set up to be. So we've got multiple bills on judicial reform. We could talk on that all hour long if we wanted to, but that's another top priority.
Yeah. Okay, now what about this big rules debate in the state Senate? Of course, you were elected by your caucus to be the Senate president. And yet, Jeff Lasloffy with the Montana Family Foundation had a great radio update earlier this morning. And he pointed out that hey, right now, in the Senate, the state Senate is basically at a standstill because time is being wasted because 9 Republicans joined all 18 Democrats earlier this week in what Jeff described as a soft coup in an attempt to get more powerful committee assignments. What is driving this debate? And it sounds like this just involves temporary rules. And then later today, you guys are discussing the permanent rules for the rest of the session, right?
Yeah, that's right. Without getting too far down in the basement here on process, it's every session, the very first motion is to adopt temporary rules. And at that point, things were shifted around from the way the majority Republican caucus had it set up. And so there's been, in Canada, there's been a lot of angst all around the Senate with that move. But today is, we had rules meet last time, committee on committees, which is the Republican committee that defines committee makeups. We've got their report on the floor today, so we'll see how the permanent vote goes.
Yeah, I know there's a number of people that are, you know, urging their friends to contact their legislator to say, hey, you guys need to stand united. You elected your leadership. Don't team up with the Democrats to try to undermine your leadership, because I mean, that could certainly cause chaos down the road. And even though the Republicans have the majority, you might effectively give the Democrats control of the state Senate as a result, potentially.
Yeah, I mean, my dream scenario always is to run the show within our caucus, within our majority caucus, and continue to strive for that. I know everybody, all 32 Republicans, everybody didn't get exactly what they wanted, but hopefully that'd be something that can be worked out within our house and not having to team up with Democrats to change over the will of the majority.
What's the risk if Republicans don't stay united? And then on the flip side, what's the benefit if they do stay united in the state Senate?
Benefit is that we can really focus on issues and not on committee makeups and the logistics of bill flow and how the process is run. I mean, it's something to argue about the process, but we're really here to argue the issues for the people of Montana. That's what I'd love to focus on. If we don't let the majority run the process, it makes it really tough to get to the conservative issues that I campaigned on and want to deliver for the people of Montana.
Well, it seems like something like this comes up every legislative session. Practically, when you were Speaker of the House in the last session, I know there was a rules fight kind of early on, but then it seemed like House Republicans were able to unite and get a lot of stuff accomplished and across the finish line after that.
Yeah, and it is. I mean, everybody, you jockey for influence and control. I mean, really, bottom line of that. And there's always that, whether it's just a single bill or the entire rules that operate your chamber. So, yeah, that's there. I've never seen it this early or this blatant, but we'll see today with the vote on the floor the tone for the entire session.
Yeah, I know a lot of people are wondering, hey, why are some of these members doing this? And, of course, hey, our inbox is open. If anybody wants to send us a message or join us on the show's pretty packed today, but may have some time to sneak some more folks on tomorrow, of course, as well. All right, Senate President Matt Regeer, and we'll be doing this weekly update every Thursday, typically at this same time, you know, unless the schedule gets crazy, the legislative schedule. But, yeah, we'll look forward to your weekly updates. What else do you want to tell folks across Montana with about a minute or so to go till the break?
Yeah, I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to come up here. We're looking forward. I'm still very optimistic. I mean, we're talking about tax cuts, right? We're arguing about how to do tax cuts. It's a great argument to be having. I think we're going to do a lot of great things for the people of Montana with the Republican governor, Republican House, and Republican Senate. So very optimistic, Aaron, and look forward to these, yeah, weekly updates. It's great to talk to you and your audience.
Well, in 1 week from tomorrow, I will be at the Montana Capitol. We'll be at the Fan Window location Friday, January 17th. So open invite for you and all of our other listeners or other lawmakers to join us on that Friday show as well. So, Senate President Matt Regeer, we'll look forward to seeing you soon. And thanks for your time.
Thanks, Aaron. Have a great day, Montana.
All right. Appreciate it. All right. And then coming up after our break here, we're going to take it to the House side of the Montana Capitol. Representative Carrie Seekins-Crow has some legislation to protect women and to protect girls, to protect your daughters. Anyway, in their safe spaces. And apparently this bill is going to be moving very fast. So that's why we're getting her on to talk about it right now. So stand by. Representative Carrie Seekins-Crow out of Billings right after this.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Yeah, so Jeff Lasloff, he does a daily legislative update that airs on several radio stations across the state. I know a lot of the YNOP stations carry it. Some of the commercial radio stations will carry it as well. But great update today where he talked about the internal machinations of what's going on in the legislature. Of course, he is a former House whip. He's former Speaker Pro Tem for the Montana House of Representatives. So he's got great insight from serving in the legislature and then, of course, covering the legislature for the Montana Family Foundation over the years. But since I don't have time to pull up the audio right now, I'll read just from the transcript of this report. House committees heard 21 bills yesterday. He says this is about par for the course. On day three, later in the session, committees will hear hundreds of bills in a day. Like a train leaving a station, the pace of hearings begins slowly, then rapidly picks up speed. The problem in the Senate is that the train has yet to leave the station. So far, zero bills have been heard. Committees are not meeting, and the Senate is at a standstill. Time is being wasted because 9 Republicans joined all 18 Democrats earlier this week in a soft coup in an attempt to get more powerful committee assignments. So anyway, that was the direct quote from Jeff Lasloff's update. And, of course, we just got to hear from Senate President Matt Regeer. But you want to talk about, you know, some of these bills, as Jeff Lasloff pointed out, you know, it takes a little while for the freight train to get up and running, and then, boom, it's fast-moving action after that. But as I understand it, Representative Carrie Seekins-Crow has a bill that should start seeing action here very soon. Representative Carrie Seekins-Crow, great to have you on the show. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, thank you so much, Aaron. Yes, House Bill 121 is going to be heard in judiciary tomorrow.
And tell us about House Bill 121. As I understand it, you know, one of the biggest issues of the 2024 elections, I think it was the sleeper issue of the 2024 elections, was at the federal level, at the local level as well, is how do we protect women? How do we protect girls? How do we protect girls' sports? But also just how the bigger picture is, how do we protect women's safe spaces from men in particular, right?
Well, exactly. And as I was campaigning, as I was talking to different groups, this was an issue that I heard consistently. Men and women alike were tired of safe spaces, of places where women were vulnerable being taken away from women and children. And so that's what this bill addresses. We absolutely expect, and this bill addresses accommodations, but it will protect women, and so that these accommodations are not made at the peril of women.
And so tell us, House Bill 121, what would it effectively do?
It would basically state that locker rooms, showers, prisons, any place where a woman has vulnerability and wants to feel safe would be protected from men entering into those spaces. And the definition, of course, is basically how we're born at birth, XXXY.
Yeah, and you know what's crazy about this is This is just kind of common sense stuff. This is how we've always done this. And I'm going to have a legal expert on here in just a few minutes talking about this story in a little bit more, you know, depth from a legal standpoint. But there's always been the women's bathroom for women and girls, the men's bathroom for men and boys. And they're the ones that are trying to turn this around and flip everything on its head. They're the ones that are trying to say, oh, no, men can go in the girls' bathroom. Oh, no, men can go in the girls' locker room. So it's just crazy to me that we have to pass a law to do what has always been done, to do the right thing, to do the common sense thing, because these people think that they can just unilaterally just upend the entire culture.
Well, Aaron, 70% of our state voted for President Trump. And one of the reasons why I believe so many people said I'm voting for common
sense,
Republican,
stations, 3 minutes to your next Fox News 30-30
rulemaking at this point is because when we feel like we're getting bullied, when we feel like we're getting our rights taken away, our sports taken away, that women are being erased. That's generally what this is doing. Our safe spaces, our sports, our identities. We also are seeing the over-sexualization of both women and children. These are the issues that Montanans are concerned with. And this is what this bill does address, as well as we're going to see some other bills this session. It's not about the dichotomy of either hatred or full acceptance. There's got to be a place there where women are safe. And it's not just about feelings. This is about real safety. This is about real dignity of women, especially women in our prison systems, women who have had trauma, who have had sexual abuse. This is a very important issue. And I'm so glad that we are at a place now where we're speaking up about this and not just being afraid because we're told that if we're speaking out against this, then we don't have compassion. I believe that this is compassion for our women and children.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to see all the shenanigans, I think, from the far left. And when I say far left, unfortunately, I mean also most in the Montana media that will run with the radical left-wing propaganda regarding the transgender issue. I mean, they give nonstop propaganda attention to the radical transgender lawmaker from Missoula all the time. But the reality is, this isn't about him. This isn't about they, them. This is about protecting women and girls. And it just makes sense. I mean, they have already California, we see what an mess California is right now on a massive scale, right? But California has already done this where they've put men into women's prisons and women are getting sexually assaulted. I mean, it's just horrific outcomes.
It's tragic. Men flat out do not belong in women's spaces. And if we ignore those biological differences, it creates real victims and it jeopardizes the dignity and the safety of girls and women. And that's why this is so important at this point.
Representative Carrie Seekins-Crow, great to have you on the show this morning. We've got an attorney who's going to break this down from a legal standpoint here in just a few minutes. But while we got you, what are some of the other bills that you're working on in the legislature here?
Well, one of my most exciting bills is actually dealing with reentry. Those folks who are reentering from being in jail, being in prison, so that we're finding a place and a space as a reentry strategy throughout the state so that we're getting jobs. I mean, right now we've got two jobs for every person in the workforce, but so that we're finding real careers, real safety for those folks coming back, and so that we're reducing crime but increasing our workforce as well. That's going to be probably my biggest attempt at policymaking this session, where I believe it's going to have a great impact on our state.
And your bill's being heard in the House Judiciary Committee tomorrow. People can testify in support of your bill remotely or in person if they're in Helena, right? And that testimony is so important because the radical left, they always bring in people by the busloads. But as you pointed out,
I would encourage people also to call their representatives and their senators, because I think that sometimes this is a big issue, and it can be scary, especially for freshmen. They don't know if they're going to be harassed. I can guarantee you people will probably be harassed. I'm already being attacked on a personal level out there. And I'm just going to encourage your listeners, don't believe it. I'm still the same person I was before I carried this bill as I'm going to be afterwards. But call your representatives, leave a message for them, let them know that you do support them in this issue. And I think that that will help give them, you know, some traction there to support this bill as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And look, this happens every session. You know, look, at the end of the day, these lawmakers, they know who sent them there and why you were sent there. And so, yeah, don't be intimidated by these wackos that are going to leave you nasty voice messages or nasty messages. Don't be intimidated by the community organizers that show up because they got nothing better to do. Stand for the people who elected you. Representative Kerry Seekins-Crow, great to have you on the show as always. Thanks for what you're doing.
Oh, thank you, Aaron. My pleasure.
All right. Yeah, great to catch up with you. And hey, you know, our phone lines are open. Oftentimes, we got a packed agenda on the show today, but oftentimes we have open phones. If there's some fast-moving action in the Capitol and Helena, you, any other lawmakers, feel free to call into this show. We typically can find some time to get that important information out. All right, next up, we've got Sarah Beth Nolan. She is legal counsel for the Alliance Defending Freedom, which is just such an incredible organization. In fact, my wife works for ADF, for the Alliance Defending Freedom. That's how much we think this is such an incredible organization. But Sarah Beth Nolan is the legal counsel for the Center for Public Policy at the Alliance Defending Freedom. Sarah Beth, great to have you on the show. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, I understand you're keeping a close eye on this House Bill 121 that Representative Crow has got before the committee tomorrow. Why is this legislation so important from your standpoint?
Sure. We're seeing this issue all across the country. It's becoming more and more of an issue that we're deviating from what has always been. Women and young girls should have privacy and dignity in spaces where they're really vulnerable. And so the state actually has a duty to provide that protection. And so that's what this bill is about, is protecting the dignity of women and girls in Montana in these spaces to make sure that they know that when they go to change or shower, that they are not being forced to be exposed or exposed to someone involuntarily. Now is the time, and I'm excited to see that this legislation has been introduced. And so I'm hopeful to see what happens over the next few weeks.
Yeah, as I understand it, if I recall right from my chat with Representative Kerry Seekins-Crow, this would apply to public facilities, public restrooms in particular, and so which would also protect women who are incarcerated. And we talked about this raging inferno in the state of California, which is, of course, all over the national news right now. But look at this, mess that California created. I think it was back in 2021, California passed a law requiring inmates to be housed in correction facilities based on their gender identity rather than their sex. So, of course, hundreds of men wanted to be transferred into the women's prison, and then a disaster ensued. Stand by, back after the break.
This is where Montana talks ag with Lane Nordlund.
This week, potato producers and industry stakeholders are gathered in Orlando, Florida for Potato Expo 2025, and quite a few Montana sweet potato producers from Southwest Montana and Western Montana joining us as well. It's one heck of an event, and I caught up with Cam Quarles, CEO of the National Potato Council, who hosts the annual event.
The program that has been put together by everybody, the steering committee, and it's going to be informative. It is going to be you're going to see everybody who's anybody in the industry is going to be there under one roof. That not just the U.S. industry, it's the entire North American industry. We've got friends from Europe and Asia will be coming in, certainly South America. We're very, very excited about what's coming together. And then not to be missed is we also provide a lot of support for our leadership foundation during the expo. So we'll have the live auction for Potato Leaf. We're going to have a new event this year. We're going to have a fun run early morning on Friday. So everybody who wants to get some exercise and also support leadership, they'll be out there. And I think you'll be out there bright and early, Lane. I can see the look on your face.
I unfortunately was unable to make that fun run this morning. From Orlando, I'm Lane Nordlund.
Mm-hmm. serving the great state of Montana. From the peaks of the Beartooths to the banks of the Clark Fork River, Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, we're packing a lot in here on this Thursday show. So much ground to cover. I want to play a highlight of Miranda Devine on Sean Hannity's show yesterday, where she brought up President Trump. And now Montana Congressman and former Trump Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke. Look, if California had done what Trump and Zinke were working to do, they wouldn't be in this mess that they're in with these wildfires right now. So Miranda Devine had a great comments on that front. I've now got the audio in hand. I'll share a little bit of that with you. And what a just series of disastrous decisions coming from the Biden administration, even though he's only in office for 11 more days. It just disastrous decision after disastrous decision. If you've heard some of the news reports on the radio this morning, you've already heard the news that the Biden administration at the last minute said, nope, we're going to leave the grizzlies on the endangered species list. We don't care if the population has more than doubled past our own recovery goals. Nope, we're leaving them there. It's just yet another predatory policy coming out of Washington, D.C. So we're going to get to that here in a few minutes as well. We've got a guest from the Montana Farm Bureau who's going to join us with reaction to that news and much more. All right, back to it here with Sarah Beth Nolan, legal counsel for the Alliance Defending Freedom. So, Sarah Beth, from a legal standpoint, what are the nuts and bolts of this House Bill 121 that Representative Kerry Seekins-Crow is pushing forward to the Judiciary Committee tomorrow?
Sure. So the bill does three things, fairly simple. First, it requires that the facilities named in the bill, these are your correctional facilities, your domestic violence shelters for women, public buildings, designate multi-user spaces that are vulnerable. We would consider those showers and locker rooms, sleeping spaces, and restrooms for either males or females. This is usually already done in most spaces. That's your signage outside of the locker room saying women. The next thing it requires is that those facilities take reasonable steps to ensure that men and women, respectively, in those spaces have privacy from the opposite sex. And then the bill provides a legal remedy. So if somebody is harmed based on whether that's the facility with permission to a man to use the multi-user women's locker room, or that facility failed to take reasonable steps and just turned a blind eye and didn't implement the law, that individual has a way to recover. And often that recovery looks like preventing those privacy violations from occurring in the future. But the bill is very inclusive and reasonable. So the bill not only allows for single-user spaces, single-user restrooms or changing areas, but encourages those. Somebody may have a variety of reasons why they would prefer to use a single user. And then whether you're a male or female, everyone is offered the same opportunity, whether they choose to use the multi-user space that is designated for their sex, or they choose to use a single user. Everyone that is already accommodated under the Americans with Disabilities Act, they are accommodated. Caregivers are accommodated under the bill. And so the goal is that everyone has dignity in these vulnerable spaces, and that is the bottom line. Women deserve to have that privacy safeguarded where they're most vulnerable, and the state actually has a duty to protect in those spaces.
That's right. And, you know, it's a no-brainer when it comes to girls' locker rooms and sports teams and things like that. But even if a woman is in jail, she still has a right to be protected. And look at what California did, you know, in 2021 when they passed the law requiring inmates to be housed based off of their gender identity. Hundreds of men were requested to be transferred to a women's facility. And then you had all these women, they got sexually assaulted. But it's not just jails. You were telling me during the break that we're also talking about women's shelters, and women need to be protected there as well. I mean, I didn't even think of that one.
Right. I mean, both of these cases, you're talking about women who are at their most vulnerable state. They are attempting to heal and rehabilitate, and especially in the shelter. We have a client, the Hope Center, that was threatened to be shut down. They're one of the only facilities in their area that serves women who are coming out of violent situations, whether that's sex trafficking or any variety of abuse. And in their case, they had a man approach them. They serve only women and wanted to be admitted. It was obvious he was struggling. And they had the decision, do we admit this man to our sleeping area where these women are attempting to heal, and he is an arm's length away, sleeping in his cot from touching another woman? Do we put him in there that re-traumatized them psychologically, or do we direct him to another facility? They chose, we have to protect our women behind these doors. That is what we are serving. They attempt to try to help him go to a facility that could help him. And then next thing you know, there's a complaint threatening to shut down the entire center. And so those women deserve a safe space.
And this was the Hope Center in Helena, Montana, right? This is the Hope Center in Helena, Montana. So it shows how this is happening on the ground here in our own state, where that's how intolerant the radical left is, where they want to shut down your women's shelter unless you allow a man to be there sleeping next to a woman. It's crazy.
Well, and our client, the Hope Center, is active in Montana. This particular instance was in Anchorage, but we see this happening all over. Those stories come out of here in Montana, all over the state, whether it's there or correctional facilities. And correctional facilities, same thing. I think it's important to kind of strip this back and put ourselves and attempt to put ourselves in the shoes of a woman who is in a correctional facility. She is placed in a cell with a man. She is being forced to shower and, not to be graphic, but groped and abused in the shower, exposed involuntarily. Time is of the essence for that woman.
Yeah.
Allowing her to stay for hours is harmful.
Especially when many of these women have already suffered that type of trauma prior to incarceration, and now you're piling onto that trauma. And then how will they ever truly get rehabilitated once they end up back out on the streets again? Well, I'll tell you what, Sarah Beth Nolan, great to have you on the show. Any final thoughts?
Ultimately, this bill is a reasonable way to protect women in spaces where they're most vulnerable, and that's what this seeks to accomplish.
All right. Sarah Beth Nolan with the Alliance Defending Freedom. Great to have you on the program. Thanks for your insight.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right. Appreciate it. Yeah, and again, ledge.mt.gov is the state legislative website. You can contact your lawmakers through that website, and you can also track when the Judiciary Committee hearing is going to take place tomorrow, talking about this legislation in particular. All right, we're going to talk about this yet another disastrous decision from the Biden administration. They just decided to keep the grizzly bears listed on the Endangered Species Act, on the Endangered Species List. So we're going to get reaction from the Montana Farm Bureau Federation here in just a second. But first up, let me just play a quick soundbite here. Sean Hannity had the New York Post's Miranda Devine on the program yesterday talking about wildfire prevention and mitigation. And she basically made the point, look, if California had done what Donald J. Trump in his first presidential term and his Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke were calling for them to do, they would not be in this disastrous situation right now.
Exactly. And their excuse is they say, oh, it's not our fault. It's not management. It's climate change. That's always their excuse. And so they double down. And, you know, this was easily preventable, and that every single person who has lost property should be suing the state of California. Donald Trump in 2018 and his Interior Secretary at the time, Ryan Zinke, pointed out that the green mentality had caused California's conflagrations then, back in 2018, when it was also a disaster. And Donald Trump said there's no reason for these deadly and costly forest fires in California, except that forest management is so poor. What happens? Ryan Zink gets thrown out on some bogus corruption scandal, and then because he was green enemy number one, of course, and Gavin Newsom and co just completely ignored Donald Trump. You add to that what you just mentioned about the incompetence of local government, Karen Bass being a perfect example. It's unbelievable that she's off holidaying in Ghana at taxpayer expense.
Yeah, just a catastrophic response from Newsom, from the L.A. mayor, the Biden regime, on and up and down the chain.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Yeah, 11 days until President Donald J. Trump is sworn in as the 47th president of the United States, but yet another disastrous decision out of Joe Biden as he clings to power for 11 more days, a handout to the radical environmentalists once again. The Montana Farm Bureau Federation, and I would add, our governor has spoken out against this decision. So has, I think, the entirety of our congressional delegation spoken out against this decision. The Biden regime announced that they would not delist the grizzly bears in four Rocky Mountain states, including Montana and Wyoming. Montana and Wyoming's petition to delist the bears was denied. The Montana Farm Bureau has, of course, expressed their disappointment with that decision. Great to have Carly Johnson on the show with us right now. She is State Affairs Director for the Montana Farm Bureau, but also is a rancher in Shodo, which, Carly, you are thick in the middle of grizzly country there, aren't you?
We sure are. And we were certainly hoping for a different outcome, and not just for ourselves, but for our communities. And we're really ready for some additional management tools and being able to work locally to manage our neighboring species.
Well, hopefully President Trump, once he's sworn in here in 11 days, will be able to start overturning things like this. But in the meantime, your reaction on a personal level, you know, in addition to the Montana Farm Bureau, but just on a personal level, when, I mean, they've already gone more than double their recovery goals. I mean, when it comes to the number of grizzlies that are out there, it's crazy how many are out there right now. But yet they're saying, nope, we're going to keep them protected on the endangered species list. Just personally, what does that feel like?
Well, I mean, it's really frustrating. I'll just level with you, give it to you straight, because it's another movement of the goalpost. And I've been experiencing this since I was a kid. You know, there was a DNA study that I remember them doing, and we were all like, oh, good. You know, we need to get the science on our side, and then they'll know and they'll understand, and we can delist grizzly bears and we can have additional management tools. Well, the science has been on our side for what I would argue is well over a decade, if not two. And now they say, well, we have to consider the social and political impacts of delisting grizzly bears. And it's pretty frustrating. When it was our social impacts, they didn't care. And now, when the science is on our side, all of a sudden social impacts matter a bunch. And I, while this is deeply frustrating, like you said, 11 days, we get to start fresh again. And in some ways that might be better, to be able to just, start over with a new administration. And we have done really good work on the ground. We've worked hard to be able to, live with grizzly bears, without, some of these additional management tools that having them delisted would offer. And we've been able to, in very, clear terms, get the population in a place where it's fully recovered. And part of what is also so frustrating about this is It's almost like we're being penalized for the work that we did, because now those population segments are large enough that they say, well, we can't do this then separately. So that's part of the challenges of what we're working through, but we're optimistic that we can work with an expansion of the 4D rule with the next administration to be able to get some additional management tools and in the interim, and then hopefully work towards a full delisting and a recognition that grizzly bears are recovered, and we should be celebrating that. This is a win.
Even Jack Hanna, you know, has made that point several years ago. Guys, there's more than enough grizzlies right now. Why are you still doing this? And so even from his perspective, he's made that argument. Yeah, it'd be like if somebody's employer said, hey, you know what? You bring in 400 new customers, I'll give you a raise. And then they come back and say, I brought in 890 new customers. We're still not giving you a raise. What? I mean, what a slap in the face. But for you as a rancher and a Farm Bureau member, why does having too many grizzlies really impact you? I mean, the threat to wildlife, the threat to livestock, and more.
Yeah, so we were talking a little bit before we went live, but I live inside a grizzly bear enclosure. And we built that grizzly bear enclosure after a sow grizzly bear walked through our yard in broad daylight, and we had a four-year-old. And she walked right, you know how kids have bike riding loops that they just go round and round in? And she walked right through the middle of our four-year-old's bike riding loop. And the only reason why he wasn't out there is because it was too windy. So that day I was grateful for the wind in Shoto. And we're walking distance from Shoto Elementary. So this is a big deal not only for my family but for my entire community. And it's really frustrating to not be able to have the management tools. And what happens when you have too many grizzly bears is the term is that they do natural population density management, which is a really nice way to say that big bears eat little bears. So what happens is you get a big bear in the best habitat, which is not on national forests because they're not properly managed, right? It's on the fringes of our communities. And then they push out the sows with cubs and the juvenile bears, these are the problem bears, out into our communities. And they live on the fringes of society because that's where they have to live because of natural.
And your four-year-old kid, you can't even go on a bike ride around the house without you wondering if there might be a grizz lurking in the mist. Wow, fascinating, fascinating insight. Carly Johnson, we got to get you back on the show. We're out of time for today. Thanks for your time, though.